¿Dónde está la biblioteca? Me llamo T-Bone, la araña discoteca.
Discoteca, muñeca, la biblioteca. Es un bigote grande, pero manteca.
Manteca, bigote, gigante, pequeño. Cabeza es nieve, cerveza es bueno.
Buenos días, me gustan papas frías. Bigote de la cabra, de Camarón Díaz. Yeah, boy, boy.
Yeah.
What?
It's 2009.
Word.
So this is episode 59.
Yeah. And we're Abed and the Disco Spider.
Yes.
So seriously, is that show the greatest thing ever or what?
It really is. And it's I keep meaning to order you. Erica lent me her Community DVDs and I won't give them back. So I'm ordering her.
And you bastard.
Set. You
So, I'm going to prop up the mic on my Rivita package.
It's very Scandinavian of you.
I know it is.
Here, we can even, if you want to move it over just a little bit, then we can use that to keep it from falling like that.
Wow, look at the setup we've got. We're like pros.
We are.
We've got a
very professional.
Almost on par with Howard Stern's.
Yeah.
Except I don't think Howard Stern's studio comes with draft pints.
No,
so we win.
So who knows?
But yeah.
So it's episode 59.
Yes.
And here we are in North Beach,
face to face.
Yeah. A couple of silver spoons. And so why are we in North Beach?
Because we have exciting news, or I have exciting news. Jordan and I now work in the same office. We see each other every day.
Yep.
And we haven't killed each other yet.
Yeah.
I think it's going pretty well.
I think it is going very well.
We tend to leave each other alone during the day and,
yeah,
and do each other's do our work.
Yes.
Which is a good foundation for a friendship in the workplace.
Yes. I agree, actually. I keep meaning to pull you aside and say I'm sorry if I ignore you during the workday.
Oh my god, no.
Don't worry. But then I kind of figure that you're a mature person and you understand
that
already.
I like to think that I'm a mature person.
Yes.
And I do understand.
Yes.
So no explanation is necessary.
Well, good.
I'm sure very soon I will be at the point where I'm too busy to talk to you,
yes,
too. So
we're very impressive.
We are very impressive.
Indeed. Yes.
We're professional ladies working in the city. I feel like a very professional lady because I take the train in to the financial district and walk to work along with everybody in their suits and heels.
Right.
So even though I'm the weirdo with flat shoes and colored hair and lots of piercings, I still feel like a professional work lady.
Yeah, it's funny. I still feel that way, even though I've been here for quite a while, and even though I usually ride my bike to work these days, like a total dirt bag. And I
like a total awesome person who's saving the planet.
Maybe, but like I look, you know, I don't really have to interact with anybody except for like the attorneys at the office.
Yeah.
So I don't have to dress up at all.
Yeah.
Like I don't have to. So I wear the same shit that I wear all the time, which is pretty dirt baggy.
I think you look very nice today.
Well, thank you. I wore like a top that doesn't have a band name on it.
Ah.
That's kind of a big step up.
Yeah.
But yes, usually, I think I've mentioned before that, you know, if I do take the bus, I have to walk by the strip clubs.
Ah, yes.
By our office. And I'm pretty sure that most observers think that I am
about to walk into any one of them.
So maybe not in the warmer months when I'm not wearing a jacket and they can see that I don't have any boobs at all. Then I might be a bit more of a mystery, I don't know. But
so, do we have any sand in our vaginas this week about anything in particular? Which are still, by the way, hairy. We still have not scheduled our bead waxing.
That reminds me, I was going to say before we left the office, we should like book our appointments online together. But let's do it tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll like, when you're on your lunch break, we can
Bug me when I'm working, okay?
Well, I wouldn't want to take the company time to arrange our beaver waxes.
I think that would be okay somehow, but
probably, actually. Dear.
We have a pretty cool office where we work.
Yes, as long as we agreed to talk about it at the bar the next day.
Totally. Well, there's always a million things that I mean to talk about on the podcast and never do, but one of the things that I remember this time was I'm still, because I'm still kind of hanging on to my previous job, I do like two shifts a week, and that was working for the vegan donut place in Oakland.
Right.
So on Sundays, actually on Friday nights as well, I do a delivery route.
Right.
And because the stereo in my car has been broken for several years, it's been a while since I've had the opportunity to listen to radio in the area. And so the delivery vehicle I use only has a radio. There's no tape deck or CD player. So I've been catching up on all my radio. And it's very interesting because it's been a long time since I listened to regular radio, aside from like student radio and like KPFA, which is super radical.
Right. So KUSF, RIP.
Yeah, exactly. So most of the time I listen to CalX, which is the UC Berkeley radio station. They usually have some good, like, experimental punk sort of stuff. Like, I think one of my favorite songs that I heard on CalX during one of my delivery routes was probably just before 6 a.m., and it was a grind slash crust core cover of the Divinyls' I Touch Myself. It was excellent.
Do you remember the band?
I do not. I don't think that they ever announced it.
Oh.
But it was pretty good. I mean, just imagine a grindcore cover of...
Surprisingly, I actually can.
Yeah. But it's pretty awesome. But my guilty pleasure has been listening to Kiss FM, which is...
Okay.
They claim to be the Bay Area's oldies station.
Okay.
And by oldies, they mean music from the 80s.
Oh, I see.
Which freaked me out at first. I was like, what the fuck? That's not oldies. That's when I was a kid. But then I remembered, like, when I was a kid, the oldies station would play, like, music from the 60s.
Right.
And now it's, you know, you know, 20 to 30 years since the 80s. So I guess they are oldies now.
I know.
But the thing that I had to remark on, in addition to all the really completely stupid ads, was... You know, during the station promos or the station IDs, they have things about, like, you should join the radio station's reward program or whatever, and then you get extra cash and you can win tickets to concerts and stuff like that. And they list the times that these special announcements or whatever are made so you can get club member points. And they don't say AM or PM. They've abbreviated it to A or P. So they say, like, every day at 8A, 10A, 2P, and 4P. And I'm like, really? Is the M that much extra effort? Is it really going to shave off that much time from that, you know, 10-second promo you have to do? It's weird, right?
It's really weird.
Yeah, okay.
I've never heard of that happening.
Yeah,
and I mean,
okay,
AM
good.
And PM have been around for a long time. So,
do you even know what they stand for? I don't know. But, like, why can't you just say the extra M? It's
one syllable.
It's not like W, which is a completely obtuse three syllables.
Right. Yeah.
M. It's not that hard.
M.
Come on, Kiss FM. Maybe we should just start calling you Kiss F. Oh. Yeah, I got you there.
Or Kiss S. Well, I'm mystified by that. I don't even know what to say.
But radio sucks in general anyway, so...
Yeah, I hardly... Except for maybe I can plug some of my old coworkers.
Yes.
And in fact, I keep meaning to email Pranjal about this. Two of my old coworkers from the record store have taken over the Friday noon slot on the Edmonton College radio station.
Sweet.
CJSR. They do Heavy Metal Lunchbox.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
And it's great. And you can listen to it online. And they have really good taste. So
nice.
Everybody should listen. It's a... I believe it is 12 noon to 2 p. Mountain time. So, like, Pacific time plus one.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
you can,
11A to 1P for those of you on the West Coast.
Yeah. And everybody else, you can figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
But
just be sure not to add that second M.
Yes. I believe that the website address is cjsr.org. But you can also just Google CJSR Heavy Metal Lunchbox.
So I'm curious about call letters in Canada, because I know how it works in America.
I have everything... no idea how it works in Canada.
Oh, okay. Well, in America, everything west of the Mississippi starts with a K.
Okay.
So that's why all the radio stations in California start with a K, like KISS or KALX or KPFA. And then everything east of the Mississippi begins with a W.
Okay.
So that's
like
interesting.
WFMU.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. WKRP.
Yeah. Cincinnati.
Yeah, I honestly, I think the only call numbers that I know are in Edmonton. And usually, call numbers actually aren't that big of a thing. Like, they're not, usually stations just kind of, like, ignore them. But I know that there was Kissin' Country, which was CISN.
Oh. Nice.
But that's pretty much the only... And then I guess CJSR. And CKUA was, like, kind of the... I guess that was the equivalent of, like, not KUSF, KPFA. I think that was kind of the equivalent.
Like, you know. Cool, cool.
Yeah. Anyways, radio, it still exists.
Indeed it does.
I actually really miss CBC Radio, which is Canada's NPR.
Well, you can listen online, right?
Yeah, it's not really the same. I mean, I guess, like, the thing is, I used to listen to, like, the local CBC station all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I grew up listening to a lot of radio. And you know, like, when I was living in Canada, I would, you know, every morning I would get up and, like, turn on the radio and start making my coffee. So, like, every day I started off listening to the radio, and I listened to it throughout the day whenever I'd be, like, cooking or washing dishes. And here I just don't... I mean, I guess I don't really have, like, a radio.
Yeah.
You know? But, and I just... I guess I'm not motivated to go and log on and listen to stream stuff online or whatever, but, yeah, it's funny, because I really did, like, grow up listening to an awful lot of radio, and I learned a lot about politics and about my country through the radio. Because
Canada has better radio than America.
Well, I mean, there's that, but it's also, like, Canada's kind of a smaller population, so...
Yeah.
Like, you get... There's more crossover, I think, between, like, the different... Like, I could hear stuff on... There would be local stuff on the CBC, but I could also hear a lot of stuff, you know, that kind of covered all of Canada.
Yeah.
Like, all of the west part of town or whatever. So, yeah. Radio.
I read an article yesterday about a women's rights group in Kiev, Ukraine, who apparently they were protesting a New Zealand radio station, and there's the tie-in, it's a radio station.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Just
nice
establishing that, yeah. So apparently this New Zealand-based radio station had a contest where the winner of the contest would be flown to the Ukraine and basically set up with a mail-order bride. So this women's rights group in Kiev was like, that's fucked up, and, you know, and they protested.
Right.
I forget where. It was probably, you know, in front of some official building, you know, government building. And they had slogans like, you know, the Ukraine is not a brothel, and stuff like that, and, you know, which is, you know, fair enough. They had a very good point. But
the Ukraine is, in fact, not a brothel.
True. It is, in fact, a sovereign nation.
Right.
Fun fact. But the way they chose to get their message across was they kind of went for the PETA tactic.
Okay.
And it was a bunch of women that dressed in bridal gowns but were topless. So they were getting their tits out to prove that Ukrainian women are not to be seen as sex objects, which to me sounded kind of contradictory. Inherently contradictory. What are your thoughts?
Okay, yeah. I think I saw your blurb on that.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to read the article and then realized it was in Swedish and that I could not, so.
Foiled again.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my thought is that it's not necessarily inherently contradictory, but it's a really obtuse way to make your point.
Yes.
You know, like, it's like saying, you know, animals should not be used for our benefit.
Yeah.
And then staging a protest in support of that view that involves animals to benefit, yeah. You know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever way. It's kind of like, well, not a good way to make your point. Like,
yes.
Even if you're technically, like, even if you're kind of internally consistent with your own morals, yeah, or yeah, whatever, definitely. You're not really presenting that to everybody else.
Yeah.
So everybody else is just being like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So you're not getting your message across in a very effective way.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of radical and progressive communities and, like, activists kind of forget about sometimes is that,
and
like,
Dr. Bronner as well.
Yeah, it, like, just because something is internally consistent for you,
yeah,
doesn't mean that, like, voicing it exactly the way that it is in your head is going to be a good way to get that message
yeah.
to other people. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like vegans who are just shitty activists where
yeah.
they're like mean and like preachy and
yeah, yeah,
shitty
yeah.
and you're just kind of like, all right, yeah, technically I agree with you, but
yeah.
I also kind of think you're an asshole and are doing like veganism a disservice by being a dick.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, there's some frat boys.
Yeah.
Some at the table.
Overgrown frat boys.
Yeah, who are like 45.
Yeah.
They've got pitchers.
Good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see how they thought, like, the tits will grab attention. But
yeah.
beyond grabbing attention, I mean, a protest in and of itself grabs attention.
And
people see it and they're like, okay, what are these people pissed about?
Well,
I mean, at least that's what I think.
You know, I mean, you could have had a bunch of women wearing wedding dresses.
Exactly.
Like, with
yeah.
the tops. That would
yeah.
have been pretty attention grabbing, too.
That, too.
Yeah.
You make a good point.
I
they did that in San Francisco several years ago, probably 10 years ago, when they did that horrible remake of that old Buster Keaton movie. I forget what the Buster Keaton movie was, but or what it was called, but it had Chris Donnelly. The remake had Chris Donnelly as basically the story is that this guy has some wealthy, you know, distant aunt who dies and leaves him a fortune on one condition, that he has to be married by his 30th birthday, which is like, you know, 2 weeks away by the time the will is read. So, I mean, the Buster Keaton movie is hilarious because it's Buster Keaton and he's awesome.
Right.
But then the Chris Donnelly movie was ridiculous because it was a talkie. And
right.
let's face it, Chris Donnelly is no Buster Keaton.
Right.
And but apparently it took place in San Francisco and it had a scene with hundreds of extras all dressed in wedding dresses chasing this man down the street. But I prefer the Buster Keaton movie
I remember
version.
That. I remember
yeah.
seeing that scene in
yes.
the preview on
yeah.
TV.
I prefer
oh
the
God.
Buster Keaton movie version because there's, and it's so subtle, it's not pointed out, whereas, you know, in a modern remake, they'd have to, like, point out this scene and put it in every trailer and make the point of it being
oh
the hilarious scene, but in the Buster Keaton version where all the people are running after him in wedding dresses, there's at least one or two obviously bearded men in wedding dresses chasing after him, which just kind of makes the scene. It's so subtle that you have to kind of...
Awesome.
Yeah, it kind of relies on the audience to pick it up and laugh at it, which is
Man,
how I like my movies.
I wonder if that's on Netflix Instant. That would be...
That would be
That'd
excellent.
Be a good thing to see.
Yeah.
I would watch it now, actually.
I love Buster Keaton. He's great.
That, I don't know why that reminds me, but... my P90X news.
Yes.
So, after... 5 weeks of being stuck on the same week.
Yeah.
where I did week 9, and then I got really sick, and I had to take a week off.
Oh, man.
And then, so I decided to repeat week 9.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to move forward without having, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got really sick again, and had to take another week off. And then did week 9 the third time. I'm on week 10. But, I don't know. Well, I'm my faith in Tony Horton is renewed. Like,
aww.
I have to say, my motivation was really flagging when I was doing the same thing over and over, and then getting sick, and then doing it over. It was hard to keep motivated. Now that I'm moving forward, I feel much more motivated. But one of my favorite things is how, like, I don't know how many people know this about Tony, but he was he started out his career as a stand-up comedian, and he was clearly a student of the old masters, like, you know, the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges, and I'd be willing to bet Buster Keaton, because some of his, like, physical comedy stuff comes out in some of his workout things.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it makes me pretty happy to be, like, working out and sweating and being totally undignified, and then having somebody, like, pull out, like, a Groucho Marx reference. Speaking of which, speaking of Netflix movies, I think that you and I should take in a Marine Story, which is a movie starring and I think written and produced by Drea Weber.
Oh, right. You told me about this. That's awesome.
And, you know, like, it sounds totally cheesy because she's, like, you know, on this fitness thing. And she... Apparently, it won, like, the top prize at the San Francisco, like, GLBTQ Film Festival, and she is an amazing actress.
Nice.
So, I'm totally stoked. I think we should watch it.
She's kind of my, I don't want to say crush, because it's not, like, a romantic crush, but, like, I want her to be my buddy.
Yeah.
I want to take Drea out for drinks, or I guess someone that perfect probably doesn't drink. But, you know, I'd like to take her out for tapas.
Yeah.
Or
that.
Or something, like a healthy salad.
Yeah. Well,
I'd like to go for a power walk through Golden Gate Park with her.
Well, I think both you and I know this, but maybe our listeners don't. We have a friend who is a trapeze art person. And I guess she is a big fan of Drea Weber, who is primarily an aerialist and trapeze artist. And, this friend got in touch with Drea on Facebook and basically said that she was a big fan and that she was looking forward to seeing her in a performance or something that was coming through town.
Teatro Zinzani.
Right.
Yes.
And so she went to the performance and she somehow found Drea and, you know, said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, I wrote to you." And I guess Drea Weber was like, "Oh, here, you know, like, I have seats for you, like, right up front."
Wow.
And, like, and, you know, talked to her for ages and ages and was, like, basically the nicest person in the entire
world. That's awesome.
So she's, like, totally ripped.
Yeah.
Like, progressive, talented actress, like, wants to, like, do good for people.
Is totally gorgeous.
Is totally gorgeous and then is, like, the nicest person in the entire world. And is, like, a crazy talented aerialist.
What the fuck, Drea Weber? Why are you so fucking perfect? God damn it.
Yeah.
Is she vegan?
You know, I don't know, but I...
I bet she is.
Well, I don't know if you follow her, but Tony Horton's personal chef is vegan.
Nice.
And she has, like, a Facebook thing and, like, a and she wrote the recipes in the Tony Horton book that I just lent you. And
yes, I'm so excited to read that.
I'm actually really addicted to some of those recipes.
Oh, like, nice.
That you've probably noticed that I've been bringing this, like, bright orange soup to for lunch.
Yes.
And it's, like, it's a butternut squash with, like, sweet potatoes and, like, tons of carrots.
Nice.
And, like, so it's basically, like,
that's
tons
orange.
Of veggies. But, like, it's lots of vegetables.
Yeah.
But then it's also, like, you know, there's coconut milk and, like,
ooh.
It's a very balanced soup. You know, like, you've got some healthy fats. You've got some fiber, you've got, like, lots of vegetables and vitamins and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So, like, if you eat that with, like, some, like, good bread, then that's, but it's an awesome recipe, and she's also got a really good, like, homemade granola recipe that I've been making a lot, and, like, a few other things, but she's vegan. I suspect that Tony Horton is vegan.
Nice.
Like, I have a strong suspicion.
Excellent.
Who knows, you know, it's a healthy thing to do. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that, like, Drea was vegetarian or vegan or something like that. But.
Man, speaking of squash, I'm all about kombucha squash now. I'm not a squash person, but kombucha is...
It's the gateway squash. I'm telling you, I was never a squash person either, and then I got into kombucha, and now I'm just, like, bring it on, anything. Squash.
Nice.
Just give it to me.
Nice. Yes, kombucha is the bomb. Yeah. And it has the added bonus of always confusing my boyfriend who always wants to call it kombucha squash. Oh. He says the kombucha, I mean kombucha. Every time, it's great.
Kombucha is gross and kombucha is awful.
I don't mind kombucha that much.
I know, yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know. I am a big squash fan, but I never used to be, and then I think I started buying it because I was in law school and I was really broke, and It was really cheap.
Yeah.
And so I was buying it and then just like chopping it into like half moons.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I was
yeah.
baking it. Nice. And I would just eat it like that. And I was like, oh, it's actually really awesome. And now I'm like, I can eat a butternut squash like in one sitting. Like
nice.
I'll just, whatever.
Excellent.
Yeah, I never used to be a sweet potato person either. Now I'm all about it.
I am all about sweet potatoes. They're pretty awesome.
I really just didn't like, you know, potatoes, but they're sweet. And I was like, no, they should be savory. But now, I get
it. I feel like when people describe foods to you like within a certain set of parameters, it really sets you up to not like it because you're expecting one very specific thing that's specific to that person and their taste.
Yeah.
But like, you know, if you're able to come up with your own comparison of how it tastes, or if you're able to taste something without any influence or any suggestions as to how you should think it tastes,
right,
then you're more prone to like it. Like, for example, I am able to drink bubbly water because I just think of it as water-flavored soda. Seriously, it sounds so crazy. It sounds like such a stupid thing, but I could not drink fizzy water. I was like, oh, this makes me puke. And then I just started thinking of it as water-flavored soda, and I could drink it. It was so weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, I don't think it's even necessarily that I, like, expected it to taste like a normal potato. It's just that I'm kind of like... The place that it takes in food most of the time is like, you know, like you mash it, you roast it, or it's like a savory place in your meal. It's not like a dessert. I mean, sweet potato pie.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never had a problem with the concept of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's more just like, fine, okay, if it's part of a dessert, fine.
Yeah.
But if it's like on my dinner plate, then I don't want it to be sweet.
Yeah.
I don't want sweet stuff on my dinner plate. But now I'm starting to get it.
Coming around to the sweet potato side.
A little bit, yeah. yeah.
Oh, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
As an apparently uninformed vegan. I assume you got that email a few days ago from Vita Vegan Con.
Yes.
About accepting sponsorship from Larry and Luna.
Right.
And I guess they've been in partnership with some dairy for some reason.
They were bought out by a dairy.
Oh, I see. Okay. I remember there was, I just kind of inferred from the email that there was some controversy, but I hadn't heard anything about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there was an actual controversy or if it was kind of like a preemptive thing. Like, I'm sure that some of you will be pissed off about this.
Right.
I don't know. I mean...
And speaking of Vita Vegan Con, I think they only have 10 registrations left.
Yeah,
and that was like
that.
2 days ago.
Yeah,
so
it might be sold out, but
yeah, check it out. If they're not sold out, you should get on it because we're going to be there, and we will be your BFF if you come.
Yep. yeah, and lots of great people are going to be there.
Yes,
I am heartily looking forward to the carpool with Mix Master Mo.
Yes,
of Mo Better Vegan. I believe Colleen Patrick Boudreau and Chris Marco are going to be heading up there together.
Excellent.
Two very awesome
there
ladies.
Will be,
speaking of...
The happy herbivore will be there for Jordan to rip into in person.
I'm going to have to do so much research on, like, why oil is, like, a healthy part of, like, a vegan diet so that I can totally, like... lay the smack down. But speaking of Colleen Patrick Boudreau, I actually had
who's
an opportunity.
Who's an awesome person,
who is an awesome
way.
Person. And I ended up randomly hanging out with her at this very
bar. Oh, really? That's awesome.
Like a week and a half ago, I was with Chris, who is a good friend of Colleen's, and we were having a very, very, very... very late breakfast, and as she was driving me home, we got a call from Colleen, and she said that she was in the city, and, you know,
Where does she normally live?
She lives in the East Bay, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But her and her husband were here, and they were up in North Beach, and so we ended up coming here and having a few drinks and watching most of the Oscars, actually.
Oh.
It was a really fun time, but she brought...
That is a late breakfast, damn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't my breakfast. I already had breakfast, and I think
sure, Jordan, too, sure.
But it was a weekend, whatever. But I got to see a copy of Colleen's latest book, The Vegan's Daily Companion.
Yes.
And it is fantastic.
Awesome.
It is really, really, really great. I mean, I know that I've kind of talked a little bit of shit on here about how I think that some of the books that are coming out are maybe not necessary. But this is, it was seriously, like, it's basically...
I think Colleen has established herself as a pretty damn good cookbook author.
Yeah, but the thing about this is that it's not just a cookbook. It's basically got, like, 365 sections, and each one kind of has a different theme. So there's a bunch of recipes, but there's also a bunch of, like, you know, kind of, like, meditations on animal activism.
Oh,
and,
that's cool.
Yeah, you know, like, reflecting on, you know, just a lot of things to think about, a lot of, like, kind of, like, ways to get involved. And it's really, really, really good. Like, it's, you know, it's
nice.
Not that, I mean, my main complaint about a lot of books that... that have been coming out, or that, you know, like, it's a lot of publishing companies who are looking to cash in on and make a quick vegan book.
Yeah.
So they're pressuring these authors to write things too fast. And
and they're covering a lot of ground that's already been covered by other authors.
Right, and they're getting people who aren't necessarily all that experienced and who maybe aren't the best people to write about the subjects that they're asked to write about,
right,
but because
right.
they have a popular blog, then they end up doing it. And not any, like, knocking of any of the authors. Like, it's totally, I think, the fault of the publishing companies.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's just they're seeing dollar signs and they're pressuring people into doing things that they aren't comfortable doing, or that they, you know, it's hard to say no when someone offers you a book contract, and I totally get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Colleen is, like, she's been doing it for a long time, and she's really, really good writer.
Uh-huh.
And she really... The thing that really came through, and I just ordered the book today, it's actually Colleen's birthday today.
Oh, nice. Happy birthday, Colleen.
Yeah. And I just ordered the book today, but when I was flipping through it, the thing that really, really shone through was just, like, how, like, committed and, like, compassionate of an activist she is. And I thought that was really... really excellent. Like,
nice.
You know, it was really inspiring, even as somebody who's kind of a jaded, cranky asshole like me. Like, it just made me feel really positive.
Mm-hmm.
And there was stuff in there, like, it wasn't, you know, flipping through it and looking at it, it was just kind of like, even from that, like, superficial look, it was really obvious that there was a lot of stuff in there that would, that me, somebody who's been vegan for quite a while, and who...
Oh, there's a random slideshow going.
Yeah, you know, whatever. But there was stuff that I would find useful, and, like, stuff that would be, like, new and relevant to me. You know, it's not just like, like, the beginner's, like, here's where you get B12. Like, it was,
totally.
You know... It went deeper than that, and I thought that was really awesome.
And that's, you know, that's a problem I find... I feel like I come up against a lot. I mean,
right.
I've been vegan 11 years now. I can't believe that. It's been 11 years. Like, I was getting all stoked. Thank
almost
you.
Almost 8 for me.
Woo!
We've got almost 20 years of veganism between the two of us.
Nice! Yeah, I was, like, you know, 10 years was obviously my big thing, and I was so stoked about that last year. I can't believe it's been 11 now. Like, I kind of want to hold on to 10, because it's a nice round number. 11's kind of like,
one.
But, but I found, you know, even several years ago, I found that, you know, there was a level of dialogue concerning veganism that just wasn't being put out there, you know, that I feel, you know, obviously outreach is really important, and, you know, I'll never disparage, you know, beginner level veganism stuff,
right,
because, you know, obviously I want as many people to go as vegan as possible because I want to save as many animals as possible, and
right.
I really believe in veganism,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, obviously that stuff is really important, and there's a wealth of information growing every day about how to be a beginner vegan, how to go vegan, how to stay vegan, you know. But for somebody who's been in it for more than a decade, I feel like there's a lot of, I feel like there's, you know, a lot to be desired in terms of opening up a larger dialogue about veganism. That kind of goes beyond the beginner's principles.
Right, right. And I think, like, letting people into more advanced activism, more, you know, just getting them to think about concepts other than, what am I going to have for dinner?
Yes.
And not that that's, you know, not that the what am I going to have for dinner question is trivial, and I know that, you know, for a lot of people, like, that's a big thing. You're never going to be vegan for 10 years if you can't be vegan for 2 years first.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not going to be vegan for 2 years if you don't know how you're going to feed yourself.
Exactly.
So that's fine, but, yeah, and that was, like, honestly, that was something that I really liked about Colleen's book, was that it was something that would obviously appeal to new vegans, but it was something that had enough depth that it could appeal to somebody like me, or you know, probably somebody like you, too, where it's kind of like there's something new to think about, and it encourages you to think.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of books, it's just kind of like, I'm a spunky blog personality, and here's what I think about all this stuff. And, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't necessarily encourage people to think for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think that that's one of the most important things about becoming a vegan and staying a vegan, is, like, you have to learn to think for yourself, because if you can't, it's going to be really difficult for you to stick to it when you are thrown into a situation like, you know, your cousin's wedding, where they're not going to give you any food. And, or, you know, whatever, your work luncheon get, where you're not going to get catered to, or whatever.
When you get the defensive omnivore that breaks down all your, you know, rational, well-thought-out arguments that you got from a book.
Right, and asks you what you would do if you were living in the Old West and you got shot and someone wanted to dig out the bullet from your shoulder and gave you their leather belt to chew on.
Is that seriously something that you've come across?
Not me. There's a thread on the PPK where...
Oh, my God.
A PPKer, one that we have met from Santa Cruz, actually, apparently got asked this question.
That is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. That was... I thought that was actually...
That's the kind of question that I don't entertain. I just punch the person in the face.
Well, stuff like that. I'm just kind of like, really, you want a serious answer to that question?
Yeah. If time machines were to exist,
right, exactly.
If I hitched a ride with Bill and Ted back to the Old West, I like the desert island question. Yeah, if you were stuck on a desert island, would you eat a pig? Like, I always tell people to ask that question, like, no, I'd fucking eat you, asshole.
Yeah.
And that shuts them up. But,
well,
you know.
I mean, I basically just refuse to give a serious answer to any of those questions because they're so stupid.
Yeah, it's not a serious question.
No, I would eat my arm first.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I'm not... Yeah,
I would eat my hair.
Yeah.
I would eat whatever the pig eats.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit.
So, have you watched any of... the excellent series from Stars, with a Z or a Z if you're not American, called it's the Spartacus series. They kind of shot themselves in the foot by calling it Spartacus, because, you know, by the end of the first series, you know, obviously the story of Spartacus is about a slave in Roman Empire who leads an uprising. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot by calling it Spartacus. Because by the end of the first season, he leads the slave uprising, and, you know, it's kind of an awesome scene. But then they have nowhere to go from there. And I guess they didn't anticipate the series being as popular as it is. So they end up making another series, which is a prequel to the Spartacus thing. So it takes place before Spartacus, but it's still called Spartacus. And I guess it's gained a lot of popularity among people because it is so ridiculously over-the-top violent and sexual.
Who would have predicted that it would be popular?
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of like... It's so over the top that people watch it to make fun of it.
Right.
At least that's what I hope they're doing.
Right.
But, so I actually came up with a drinking game for it. My partner watched the original Spartacus, colon, Blood and Sand.
Okay.
And he is currently watching the prequel, which is Spartacus, colon, Gods of the Arena. starring Lucy Lawless. Yeah, Lucy Lawless gets her tits out. You've seen the second season of Dexter, right?
Yes.
So Lila is in it as well.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I hate her.
Yeah, everyone hates her, but she's in it.
Fuck her.
Yeah. And a few of the much-beloved characters from the first season. So anyway, the boyfriend is currently watching the prequel series, and I've come up with a drinking game, which is every time somebody says or makes a visual reference to the word cock, you have to take a shot.
Okay.
And less frequent, but also very popular, is references to women's genitalia or Jupiter's cock, which earns you 2 shots.
Jupiter's, is that the name for women's?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Oh, no, like if they say, like, you're a wet cunt, then you take 2 shots. Oh, or if they say, like, by Jupiter's cock, I will avenge you, then that's 2 shots.
I thought you were saying that Jupiter's cock was a name for the female genitalia.
Jupiter's cock is the most, the mightiest cock of them all, didn't you know?
Yeah, but that would have been an awesome name for the female genitalia.
It would have been, but I'm afraid the Roman citizens didn't quite view females the same way.
I suppose.
They could not own property or anything like that.
Goddamn them.
Yes. So it's a fairly ridiculous series involving lots of tits, and I think a technique which they sort of kind of approached in the first series, but they've really refined in the second series to a fine art, is the technique of interspersing cuts of fight scenes and action scenes with sex scenes. So two things will be going on at the same time. Like in a very recent episode of Spartacus: Gods of the Arena, there was a scene where one of the slave gladiators is fighting another slave gladiator, and that's interspersed with scenes of his wife, who's also a slave, who's been ordered to have sex with another slave for the amusement of a high-ranking official.
Fair enough.
Those scenes are cut in together. You know, like there's the man fighting the other man and then his wife having sex with another slave. And so those scenes kind of like get cut, interspersed with each other. So it's like violence and sex, blood and tits. It's kind of amazing. It's you kind of have to admire them for like just openly and shamelessly going for the lowest common denominator there. Like, yeah, we know we're all about tits and violence, so.
So it's sort of like that scene in Lord of the Rings, the third one, where
are you about to nerd out on me?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. I'll know exactly what you're talking about, that's fine.
That scene where, what is his name?
You forgot a character's name in the Lord of the Rings, you lose all nerd cred.
I remember his father's name.
Boromir?
No, their dad.
Right.
The steward of Gondor.
Okay.
Something, son of Expelion.
Right.
Where he sends...
Theoden.
No, it's not Theoden. Theoden's okay.
The riders of
Rohan. Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's the king. It's the steward of Gondor. His name starts with an E, but I can't remember. But where he sends Faramir out into a hopeless battle to try and recapture Osgiliath.
Okay.
And the scenes of the battle of, like, you know, Faramir's force being overcome by the orcs and everything else is interspersed with shots of the steward whose name I can't remember eating and like there's all like
oh yeah
he's got, like, you know, he's
I remember
eating,
that
like, just kind of like a fucking like barbarian king you know
yeah,
like
yeah.
he's got like
turkey
dripping
legs
down.
And shit yeah.
Yeah. and then Pippin the Hobbit is singing.
And I remember that. Okay,
and it's actually like a really like poignant, like really emotional. It's like a really well done scene.
Right.
But it's like, you know, interspersed these kind of two kind of similarly violent in a way acts.
Yeah.
But so it sounds like that's the same kind of technique, but you know, just with sex.
A little more lowbrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucy Lawless's boobies.
Right, well. Who can resist those?
Did you know? I was reading up on Lucy Lawless on IMDb.
Of course.
That's my jam. apparently after the cancellation, this is becoming a recurring thing. Like, after everything is over, the person responsible for creating that thing, like, outs one of the characters as gay. Kind of like in Harry Potter, where J.K. Rowling's like, oh yeah, Dumbledore, totally gay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, the series is over and he's dead now, but he totally loved the cock while he was alive. It was like the producer, director, writer, somebody that was involved with Xena Princess Warrior. He was like, oh yeah, Xena and Gabrielle, totally lesbians. So.
Alright. Yeah,
it's fine. It's nice that they say that, but it would be nicer if we had an actual ongoing series with gay characters at the moment.
Yeah.
Instead of looking back and being like, that series is so much more awesome now that I know the main character was gay.
Well, you know, there were some strong gay characters in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ah,
specifically lesbian characters.
Oh, okay.
yeah. It's now on Netflix Instant View, and I feel like you should maybe try and watch it.
I know. I've known so many people who are into Buffy, and I think I've seen a few episodes. I never really got into it. Maybe I should give it another shot.
Yeah, like you have to kind of start it from the beginning, and you have to follow the narrative, because it's a very character-driven story.
Right, right.
And it won't... Like, Mike has now seen the entire thing.
Uh-huh.
And he was very opposed to it at first, because he'd seen a couple episodes, like, kind of here and there, and he was kind of like, seems stupid. But then when he watched it from the beginning, he was like, this show is brilliant. And he's like, there's so many, like, awesome, like, really smart, like, horror movie references.
Nice.
And, like, he's like, it's obvious that this guy, like, loves classic horror movies. And I was like, yeah, I know, like, he's, you know, Joss Whedon, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, no, like, it's a really good show. And he was totally obsessed. Like,
I will have to check it out. If Mike's obsessed, then...
Like, he was, like, downloading it so he could watch it on the train on his way to work.
Wow.
Yeah, so. I'm just saying.
Well, I was greatly rewarded by trusting your recommendation in Veronica Mars, so...
Yes. People who like Veronica Mars always like Buffy the Vampire.
Okay. I'll give it another shot.
Strong female characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, awesome, like, comedy, and, yeah...
I remember seeing one episode a long time ago where there was like some like snail creature from outer space or something, and it was fucking with Buffy's mom's mind.
Oh, yeah.
And there was one scene where she's lying in bed and Buffy just thinks she's kind of crazy and losing it, lying in bed rambling.
Yeah.
But then you see that she's looking up at the ceiling and there's this like crazy creature like clinging to the ceiling. And sometimes, I have to admit, sometimes when I'm lying in bed at night, I still think about that scene and get really freaked out, and I can't look up at the ceiling.
That was from season 5.
Okay.
That was like later, Buffy. The thing about Buffy that is so awesome, and I don't know if I've told our listeners yet about how I came to be into Buffy, because originally I was a skeptic. I saw the movie with...
Oh, Christy Swanson?
Yeah. When I was...
And Pee Wee Herman?
Was he in?
He was. Luke Perry?
Yes, that's the name I was thinking of. But,
yeah, Pee Wee Herman was the main vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I saw it when I was really young, and and I was just kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then when the show came out, I was just kind of like, yeah, well, you know, I saw the movie. I don't really have, like, a burning desire to...
Right, right.
And it was actually my dad who got really into the show when it was on TV, and I was like, all right, Dad, you know, fine. And in the end, he convinced me, because he was down in L.A. He went to a conference, I think it was like a constitutional law conference or something like that. And he was there, and he told me the story of how he was out for lunch one day at this conference, and he was at a table with six or eight other lawyers. And apparently, like, at a nearby or maybe at the same conference center, there was some kind of, like, I'm not making this up, like, some kind of, like, physics or, like, astrophysics conference. So there were, like, a ton of physicists And, like, you know, they all had
So it was a smart people gathering.
Pretty much. I mean, like, they all, he was saying, you know, like, they were at this restaurant, you know, the conference center, and there were just, like, lots of tables of lawyers and lots of tables of, like, people from this, like, physics right. conference or whatever. And he said, like, he was at a big table of lawyers, and they were really close to a table of people from the other conference.
Uh-huh.
And he says, you know, like, they were all kind of talking, and then somehow they started, like, the two tables started talking amongst themselves. And this was in, like, the mid-90s, okay. right when the show was on TV. And he said that the two tables, there was, like, 14 people in total. Pretty much everybody at both tables ended up talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer because they all watched it.
That's
and
hilarious.
And they all loved it. They were all like,
oh my god,
the best shows on TV.
That's hilarious.
And he's just kind of like, yeah, it's not like a dumb show for teenage girls. And I was
right.
like, all right, fine. But, you know, I was in my mid-teens, and I was very anti-establishment and very, you know, I was a big rebel. So, like, I couldn't do anything unless it was... So when I kind of heard that, like, a bunch of, like, you know, old smart nerds liked it, and I was kind of like, okay, fine, I can watch it. And then I started watching it, and I loved it, and I've loved it ever since. And I still, like, I'll rewatch the entire series
nice.
Once every year and a half or so. It's really good because it's a really, like, you know, it's got all this, like, supernatural stuff and all this kind of, like, you know, vampires and demons. And,
right.
You know, it's in this whole other alternate universe. But at the same time, like, it really chronicles the life of somebody going from, like, a very privileged girlhood
uh-huh.
and, like, how difficult it is for her to transition from that into, you know, adulthood and, uh-huh. like, looking after the people in her life and basically, like, literally saving the world.
Yeah.
It's like this really kind of great allegory for, I think, like, strong women, like, coming of age and, like, having this responsibility, you know, not necessarily to save the world literally, but, like, I'm sure that, like, every kind of, like, tuned in, smart, strong woman out there who has gone through their teens and grown up has felt that kind of pressure, like, you know, how do I live my life while, you know, like, kind of keeping my ideals about kind of saving the world, you know? It's actually a really smart analogy.
Nice.
And I don't know, like, it's gay positive, it's very women positive, obviously. you know, it features a lot of, like, strong friendships and, like, characters who really, like, change a lot and really grow a lot.
Right.
It's pretty rare in television.
Yeah.
You know? So.
All right. You've convinced me.
Yeah.
I'll give it another shot.
Okay, good. It really, like, it really is a great, great series.
Nice.
And I will come over and watch it with you if you want, so I can tell you all about it.
Cool.
And I'm sure that lots of our listeners would agree with me. I know that many of them have watched Buffy. If Mo is listening to this, she will back me up.
The only other Joss Whedon series I've seen is Dollhouse, which was completely ridiculous,
and
I loved it because it was ridiculous.
I've seen a few episodes. I know my brother was really into it.
Uh-huh.
And I need to, now that it's on Netflix, I need to watch it in its entirety. I also would recommend Firefly, which is...
Okay.
You will have noticed if you've been watching Community this season, there was a shout out to Firefly.
Oh, really?
Between Troy and Abed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The nerds.
I'll have to revisit that.
Yeah.
This is a very roundabout transition, but I remembered when you mentioned Community, they recently had, now I'm forgetting his name. Kunta Kinte, the Reading Rainbow
LeVar
guy.
LeVar Burton?
Yes, LeVar Burton, who I read on a blog was a total asshole and he went to the Apple store in Los Angeles, but that's
really?
Neither here nor there. Anyway, reminded by LeVar Burton of Take a Look, It's in a Book.
Right.
And another interesting story from my book about Prohibition which I probably read about 20 more pages since our last podcast, so I'm making great strides.
Nice work.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll finish it up so that I can lend you, I need to finish up my copy of the book about Tony,
yes,
the benefactor of our office, so I can give it to you so you can read up about Tony as well.
Okay. Well, I've got a book about another Tony. I've got Tony Horton to read up on now. Yeah. So
That one will take you about 1 hour.
Right. So, I read this book about Prohibition that, I believe it was Woodrow Wilson that had a handshake that was likened to a 10-cent pickled mackerel in brown paper.
Way to go, Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, way to have a shitty handshake. But that brings me to the other Tony, the Tony we work for.
Yeah.
When I had my job interview,
yeah,
he came in and, you know, everyone was asking me questions, and it was, you know, it was nice. It was a very friendly atmosphere, but, you know, any job interview is going to be a little nerve-wracking. So I was like, oh, I hope I say the right things. And then he, like, strode in, you know, the big boss guy that founded the law firm and everything.
And perhaps, can I just give a little... For anybody who is unfamiliar, Tony Serra, you can look him up. He's got a Wikipedia entry. He's a revolutionary, very progressive, lawyer.
He's kind of a badass.
Total badass. He's represented people like Judy Barr from the Environmental Liberation Front. He's represented people from the Black Panther Party, such as Huey Newton. He's represented people from the Symbionese Liberation Army. He's represented people from the Hells Angels.
Yes.
He has been around for a long time, and he is
kind of amazing.
He is totally amazing, and I would venture to say probably one of the best trial lawyers practicing in America today. Like, not really an exaggeration. He's a big deal.
He's a legend. We'll put it that way.
Like,
legitimately, living legend.
He legitimately is. Like, I'm not trying to be like, oh, our office is so awesome. No.
Yeah.
Like, he actually, you know, yeah. And he spent time in jail. He's basically a conscientious objector to taxes.
Nice.
He believes that they are used to fund, you know, wars that he finds unjust, and, you know, all kinds of social programs that he does not agree with. You know, like, obviously he's on board with roads and schools and everything, but he's not on board with, like, No Child Left Behind and all the bullshit. And so he's actually done time in jail because he refused to pay his taxes.
That's
awesome. Yeah, lock me up. I'm not giving you a cent for that shit.
Score.
Yes. So anyway, this is the person that we are talking about.
Yes. That's my new boss. Jordan's old boss. Current boss.
Well, I don't even know. He's not really my boss because I just primarily work for the one attorney that I work for.
Well, he's the big chief.
He's the big chief in charge. And occasionally I will do, like, stuff for him.
Yeah.
But I'm a contractor, so I'm a little different.
So everyone's asking me these questions, and it's, you know, it's friendly, but also nerve-wracking, as any interview will be. And he just strides into the room where we're having an interview and puts his hand up for me to shake. And I like to think I have a firm handshake. And he grabs my hand, and before I even have a chance to, like, reciprocate the handshake, he comes very close to breaking every bone in my hand. I was like, oh my god, that's quite a handshake.
And the other thing about him is he's like 72 or 74.
Yeah, he's quite old.
Yeah.
So he grabs my hand, nearly crushes it, and says, you'll fit in fine here, welcome aboard, and walks out. And everyone starts laughing, they're like, I guess you're hired. So. He's a cool guy. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm sure I will enjoy it very much more as I get to know him better.
Yes, and right now, you've been working when he's out of the office.
Yeah.
A lot of the time because he's in a jury trial. Usually when he's not, he's not in the office all the time, but he usually is there for a couple hours a day.
Yeah.
And he just kind of sits at that big back table and consults with everybody that, you know, he's sharing files with.
Nice.
Whatever. It's awesome to be in a place where it's not just like, you know, oh yeah, we're radicals and we're dissenters, and then, like, you know, oh, but everybody has to agree.
Yeah.
You know, like,
totally.
A place that actually allows dissent in the workplace is pretty awesome.
I hate to sound cynical, but I feel like that's a dying art.
I think
feel
so.
Like people in our generation don't know how to be progressive and leftist and still disagree with each other respectfully.
I think that it's really hard for people to disagree, period. You know, like, yeah. I think that there's so much emphasis, I think, put on, and especially as women.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're just really taught to be really agreeable and to...
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like one of the things that I really value about our friendship is that, like, we've totally been in places where we have disagreed and where we've fought with each other and been mad at each other. And yet we still came out on the other side and we're still, like, best friends. And that's... I really... Especially given that, you know, like, I've had other people in my life where that has not happened.
Yeah.
I really value that a lot, and I think that that's really important and whatever. But I think, I don't think that that's valued all that much in this society, and I think that's really too bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm distracted by the girl wearing a sheep as a fanny pack. Oh, it's a necklace. I'm sorry, it's a sheep necklace.
They look like they're tourists.
I think they might be tourists.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really awesome to be able to say, like, hey, I disagree with you.
Yeah.
And not have it be like a personal, like,
We can't be friends anymore because we don't see eye to eye on the issue of,
you know,
blah blah blah.
Right. You said something that offended me, so I'm just gonna
not talk to you again and not tell you why.
Forever, yeah. And that's really gonna help things.
And like, unfriend you on Facebook without telling you why.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's partly, you know, new media is to blame. Like, it really allows people to reach new heights of passive aggressiveness.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I've definitely had to take stock of what I'm about to do several times and be like, that's not you. That's some passive-aggressive bullshit, and, you know, you're not 20 anymore, and you need to move on and act like an adult. So I've definitely passed up several opportunities to be exceedingly passive-aggressive, and it's very tempting.
I know. I think I did one sort of passive-aggressive thing last week, but...
Yeah. Ooh. Calling the PA police on
you. I did make a post on Facebook about how I was experiencing Schadenfreude.
Yes.
Which I suppose is a little bit passive. I didn't really mean it that way, but I feel it kind of was that way. But anyway, I still was.
Well, I have a feeling whoever the intended audience was probably doesn't know what Schadenfreude means, so
it's possible.
You're safe. Do we have any emails?
Oh, you know, I think we might.
Ooh, exciting.
Let's see.
I'm going to let you look it up on your phone because your phone is better than mine and faster. Oh my god, look at that. You have like your... That's amazing. Vegan Cuts is now following you.
Oh, yeah. Bloody, bloody, blah. Oh, somebody emailed us about the Brazilian experience.
Exciting.
Alex emailed us again. This was ages ago, but
hooray.
Awesome. I really love her. Okay, well, why don't we read these two emails? Because we have two. Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. So this is from Alex, who is our awesome buddy in
Ottawa.
She's
our pen pal.
Yeah. And we love her. Okay, so Alex says, hi, Erica and Jordan. Just wanted to quickly say hi and let you know that you are both still loved and listened to.
Yay!
Something funny from the last show. You were asking how anybody could watch Requiem for a Dream more than once. I should have followed this sentiment, but no. I had seen the movie a couple years back, then over the summer I took a sociology course in addictions. Our assignment was to analyze a movie involving drugs/drug users, and Requiem was on the list.
Oh dear.
I thought because I already knew the movie that it would make the assignment easier.
No.
Wrong. So wrong.
So wrong.
by the end of it, I just about wanted to curl up into the fetal position like all the characters did at the end of the movie and just stay there motionless. Not only did I have to watch it again, but I had to rewatch certain scenes, often the most disturbing ones, over and over to get a good understanding of it.
Oh, dear God.
I so wish I had chosen Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Much love.
That's what I would have chosen.
Me too. Much love, Alex. Well, Alex.
Oh, dear.
You are a braver woman than either of us.
I'll take NPH snorting coke off a hooker's ass any day.
Yes. Well, you know, if if you ever make it down to San Francisco, and I hope you do, you should come and visit.
Yes.
And bring your adorable dog. Then we can have a three. I was going to say threesome, but that's not what I mean. I mean a movie date with the three of us.
Yes.
And we'll watch something happy and uplifting.
Yeah.
But thank you for your email.
Oh my goodness. As always, yes. Alex is our best friend, and she writes to us, which is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So here.
No, I get to read one. Oh boy. Woo! From Tracy. First of all, I had to share a funny story about a did that hurt question. I have a tattoo on my wrist, which hurt worse than any of my other piercings / tattoos. So when a friend asked, did that hurt? I responded, not at all. It actually tickled like little butterfly feet dancing all over my wrist. She just smiled and laughed. I guess she wasn't able to detect that I was being a smartass. One day she storms up to me and told me how she had decided to get a tattoo on her wrist since I said it didn't hurt. And she was talking to the artist about how her friend said it didn't hurt at all. So he tried a needle with no ink to make sure she was sure, and she flipped out. Oh dear. Although I think your friend should know that after about 5 minutes, once your adrenaline kicks in, it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah. It's different for every person.
Yes. And there's no way your wrist hurts as much as your feet. So tell your friend to get her feet done first, and then she won't complain about the wrist.
Or your elbow.
Yes. Yes. Anyway. So I think it's funny that you brought up getting your girl junk waxed. I just did it for the first time 1 week ago. My boyfriend had planned a last-minute weekend getaway, so I decided, okay, I've got tattoos. That lasted way longer than the 20 minutes will down there. No more chicken shitting out. So I made the appointment Monday morning online right before I left for work, That way I wouldn't really be able to cancel it and therefore would just go through with it. I read Yelp reviews on this lady, and a few people mentioned how she was so nice and made their first time so easy, but I was still sitting in my desk all day freaking the fuck out. Everyone could tell something was wrong, but what was I supposed to say? Oh, nothing's really wrong. I'm just getting my hoo-ha and ass waxed immediately after work, so I'm a tad anxious today. So I go, and my new esthetician comes out with a smile and hand me some no-scream cream and told me how to put it on. And...
offered me a glass of wine.
Okay. Offered me a glass of wine. She could tell I was nervous. That's a good wax you got there.
Yep.
So, of course, I downed two in the 30 minutes I was waiting for the no scream cream to finish getting into my flesh. Seriously. After it was done, I felt so stupid for being so anxious about it all day. I mean, there were some parts that definitely got my attention. That's a good way of putting it. But for most of it, we were just chatting like I do with my hairdresser. I seriously see why some people say that once you wax, you won't go back. Oh, and by the way, the part I thought would be the most painful and embarrassing. I mean, no one wants to hear, okay, put your knee forward and lift your right butt cheek with your right hand. Actually didn't hurt at all. If you bleach your assholes, please don't put the pictures at this as the show art. That's all I ask. You're safe, Tracy. We will not put pictures of our assholes as the show art at any point.
I absolutely promise. And I actually promise that I will never, ever, ever bleach my asshole. So,
yeah, I think I'm happy with the hue, shade, and value of my asshole.
I'm happy not knowing what hue my asshole is.
Well, yeah, that's actually, I don't know mine either. And I'm happy with it.
Sure.
I'm sure. Yeah, I swear, I don't look at it every day in the mirror. I don't have an anus diary to record the various shades.
Anyways,
that was a very good email. Thank you for...
Thank you, Tracy.
Yes. Thank you for preparing us for the potential... I don't know. Firestorm.
Experience.
Yes. Experience.
Yeah. Well, yes, tomorrow we will make our appointments. And yes. Hopefully by the end of the week we will...
We'll be able to speak with some authority on the subject.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I can speak with a little bit of authority on the subject, but I'm still looking forward to it.
Yes.
It's been too long.
Yes. Well, this will be my first time. So,
yes. I've pre-gamed. I waxed my lower legs last week, so I'm in the game. I'm ready to go. I'm in it to win it.
I've been shaving, but I haven't been shaving. And I forgot. I should tell our listeners. I'm a fair-skinned woman, and I have dark hair.
You are of the Pictish people.
Yes. Because I have no other physical flaws, my husband likes to make fun of me for my mustache.
Aww.
So, because he has been such a dick about it, I'm going to get my mustache waxed as well.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't think you have a mustache.
I have a little bit. I mean, honestly, I do like to say that it's because it's really the only thing he can think of to make fun of physically. So
that's a good defense. I
If that's the worst thing that I've got,
yeah, that's true.
I'm okay.
That's
I'm okay
true.
With
that's
that.
True.
You know, he's the one that has to live with his many physical flaws.
Yeah.
So whatever.
A host of physical flaws.
Yes. But yeah, so I'm gonna get that done on my eyebrows as well.
Ooh,
because I pluck them, but I hate plucking them.
I'm sure you will not agree with me, but I have to say I'm a little jealous of people that have very full, luscious eyebrows.
Dude, no.
Because I mean, you can tell mine kind of wimp out right around the arch, and I have to kind of highlight them if I want to get dolled up. I have to put
nice
some eyebrow pencils.
No, no.
Well, thank you for saying
mine, okay. If I didn't pluck them, they would grow down to my eyelashes. And I'm not even kidding.
That's awesome.
No. No.
You're like a character out of He-Man or Thundercats or something.
That's a slight exaggeration, except that, honestly, they would... attached to my eyelash, this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
Have you ever had threading done?
No.
Because that's another thing I'm interested to try, but I don't think I have enough eyebrow hair to do it.
Oh, I have enough eyebrow hair.
You should totally try threading and let me know what
it's
like.
Well, maybe I will next time. I usually pluck, but I really, really, really hate plucking my eyebrows.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. I hate plucking my eyebrows, and I hardly have any eyebrow hair, so I can imagine if you have very full, luscious eyebrows,
for
that
me,
would be painful.
If I don't pluck for a while, and then I have to go back in and fix everything up, it's a 20-minute job, and I'm not kidding, it really is, and it sucks.
Oh dear.
Yeah. But on that note, I guess we've kind of come full circle.
Yes.
So
the slides have started again.
Yeah.
So we can look at turn-of-the-century naked ladies in their stockings.
We should probably...
This lady has a plank of apples with her breasts resting comfortably in between the apples. This lady's just naked, but she has a turban on.
Yes. Classy.
1920s porn. It's so demure.
I could totally be a 1920s porn star.
Me too.
I could totally do that. Just sit there naked.
Yeah.
It's the whole bend and spread thing that I could not do. All you have to do is sit there or lie there draped on a divan.
Totally.
And I'm cool with that.
Oh,
I'm still not sure if my boobs are big enough, but my self-esteem is big enough.
I like how some of these are obviously naked ladies, but they've been touched up by the censors or the social mores of the day, so they still don't have pubic hair or nipples, even though they're naked. I think before we sign off, I would like to urge our listeners to, if you don't have the Firefox browser, you should go to firefox.com, because they have a live streaming video of red panda cubs, which are sometimes called firefoxes, but they're more commonly known as red pandas, and they are officially the cutest animals in the world. And they've got two cubs, It's a streaming video from the Knoxville Zoo, and we all hate zoos, and boo, they're bad. But let's face it, a streaming video of red panda cubs is fucking amazing and
cute. It's not too bad, yeah.
So check it out, because it's amazing, and especially during the day, they romp around and lie on sawhorses with all their limbs hanging off and chew on bamboo, and they're just so cute, it's unbelievable. So yeah, check it out. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, until next time, and hopefully next time will be in about a week's time, since we now see each other 5 times a week.
Yes. So. Hopefully we'll get our shit together and get regular episodes out.
Yes.
I think so, too. And I think our episodes will be more regular and more commonly under the influence of some substance or another from here on out. So, yes. Get ready for entertainment.
Yes. Prepare yourselves.
Yes. And, so hopefully talk to you soon. And hopefully see you at Vita Vegan Con if you get any of the remaining 10 tickets.
Yes.
And watch the Red Panda Babies.
And we're out.